On today's show, we'll be joined by none other than the Podfather himself, Rockets Wire editor Ben DuBose, to discuss the Houston Rockets' new team identity, the pairing of Alperen Şengün and Jabari Smith Jr., and what those two look like sharing the floor both offensively and defensively, what the Bruno Fernando contract means for somebody else on the roster who may be the guy that is on the chopping block, all of that and more coming up right here at Locked On Rockets.
This is Mission Control, Houston.
Ignition sequence start.
The Houston Rockets select Jalen Green and Jabari Smith Jr.
T-minus 15 seconds. Guidance is internal.
Every time I step on that floor, I'm coming.
You're getting somebody who's going to come in with a chip on their shoulder, somebody who's going to come in and compete from day one.
6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
What's up and welcome to another edition of Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. As always, I'm your host, Jackson Gatlin, native Houstonian and credentialed media member. I'm also the host of Locked On NBA Mondays, host of the State of the Rockets podcast, as well as Rockets Watch. Be sure to follow along on Twitter at JT Gatlin and the show, of course, at Locked On Rockets, where you're free and available on all podcast platforms, including YouTube. Joining us now is the Podfather himself, none other than Rockets Wire editor Ben DuBose. You can follow on Twitter at Ben DuBose. Ben, it has been far too long since we've had you back on the pod. Please accept my deepest condolences for, you know, just and for these transgressions, for not having you on the show in way, way too long, man.
No worries. It happens. I had my time with CCCR, so I didn't go completely off the pod grid, but I'm glad to be back on the main station now.
The main station. Yeah, I don't know. I guess this is we'll call this the main station for Rockets podcasting. And what, this is a great time to talk about the Houston Rockets because vibes are incredible right now.
Immaculate.
The vibes are immaculate coming fresh off of a preseason win. It was a preseason win, but you know, some really exciting times when we look at just how different this Rockets team looks. And I think that's the place I want to start with you is just this team. To me and to a lot of people, right, it just feels like there's a night and day difference. And I know it's one game, and I know you take it with a grain of salt. It's preseason. Mm-hmm. It's the Spurs. They're probably going to suck this year. But just a lot of things scream that this team is just going to look drastically different this season compared to last year.
Yeah, absolutely. You could see the benefits of continuity. These guys had been in the gym during the offseason. I also think having a lot more alignment in terms of the motivations helps a lot. Everybody, they're not all young, but other than Eric Gordon, who's been really talked about as the consummate professional, just a great teammate, and Boban as well, it's a very young team with guys that are fairly in alignment in terms of their NBA trajectories, as opposed to the last couple of years. It's been a mix of a lot of young players, but you also have some veterans like John Wall and Christian Wood that having their own agenda might seem a little bit harsh, but they're just at a different point in their careers than the young guys and have different goals when it comes to what they're trying to do, not just for the team, but to build themselves for their next stop as well. Whereas it feels like there's a lot more alignment from the top on down this year. And I just thought last night, I did a preview on my podcast the other day with Paolo Alves, and we talked about not wanting to put a number on the Rockets should win by X, although because they won by 38, whatever I would have thrown out, they clearly exceeded that. But like my main priority was just that they needed to look better than the Spurs. They needed to go out with confidence because one of the reasons for optimism beyond just the sheer fact that this year's Rockets team does have more continuity, they are in more alignment. The leaders of the team, when you think leaders, you think typically head coach and point guard, and it's basically a contract year for both Steven Silas and Kevin Porter Jr. So everybody's incentivized to try and get a few more wins to prove that they can get this done. But beyond all of that, the reason I have for optimism is that the tanking landscape has changed a little bit. Last year, for example, the other teams that were close to the top in the tanking race with the Rockets were the Magic, the Pistons, the Pacers, all those are out east. One of the things that's changed this offseason that, in my opinion, has the Rockets likely to maybe be a little bit ahead of their over-under win projections. Most of them I've seen like 23 to 25 and a half games. I would go upper 20s to near 30 myself. And one big reason for that is that the tanking landscape has really shifted. You've seen San Antonio and Utah just dramatically tear things down. Oklahoma City, I don't know if they ever got out of tank mode, but certainly with Chet, the big prize from last season, they're not going to get Chet at all this year. And then Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who knows when he's going to be back, and even when he is back, then you have to see what they do in terms of usage, minutes. Does he play back-to-back? I assume they'll be very careful with him, both for tank purposes and also just because he's so young and it's a situation that's pretty clearly not going to be a season where they're winning big anyway. And so, long story short, you have all these teams in the West that are at a different place relative to a year ago, when really, when we started last season, the Rockets were the only, other than maybe Oklahoma City, tanking team in the West. Now, I know you can point to Portland and say, well, Portland started tanking midway through, but honestly, that happens every year. It even happened to the Warriors 2 years before that. There's always going to be a team, especially a veteran-laden one, that once the injuries don't go their way, it's easy to say, hey, this is a lost season, so I'm going to try, speaking organizationally, to really sort of pile up losses and get the best bang for my buck in terms of a draft pick for all of my suffering. That happens with injuries. But in terms of apples to apples, there's a lot more bad teams in the West. That's one reason why, especially when combined with the continuity, the chemistry of the Rockets, that I'm bullish on what the Rockets can do this season. And guess what? Right out of the gate, it's the preseason, but we got to see the Rockets against one of those tanking teams, and they look better in every single way. They executed on the floor, but I really like the confidence. It felt like that they knew going into that game from the outset that they were the better team. They were the more talented team. They were the more together team. And that's the way it played out on the floor. And that's a really, really good place to start because, again, your expectations should be minimal. No one should be banking on even a play-in run based on one preseason game. But I think a good place to start with this team is that they should not be in that bottom tier this year. San Antonio is an example of a team that should be. And that, and in that sense, even though it's the preseason, I really liked what we saw last night.
Absolutely, right. And to your point about the kind of the win totals, I've got the Rockets maybe pegged for somewhere in between maybe 25 to 30 wins, kind of right in that ballpark range. So more or less kind of exactly where you've got them as well. And I do think it's important, right? Kind of you've got to set a standard somehow in some capacity, right? And if that standard is simply just, hey, look, the Spurs are probably going to be the worst team in the West, if not maybe the worst team in the entire association. We need to come out and set the tone, at least against this team, because we might not be better than a whole lot of other teams in the NBA, but at least the two to three teams that we can certifiably be better than, we need to come out and really show.
And by the way, you've got Utah twice in the first 7 to 10 days of the season. So I think that's going to be a theme that comes up again. Another Western Conference tanking team, a new one, is going to come up later this month twice. And so, yeah, these are really big statement opportunities. And even though it's the preseason, they definitely passed with flying colors in the first one.
Yeah, that was going to be my next point is just, you know, they've got Utah right around the corner, and that's going to be a good test to kind of gauge where we think this Rockets team is at in relation to those other kind of bottom feeder teams in the Western Conference, right? Are they at the top of the pecking order of the bottom feeder teams, or are they more closer to the bottom, you know, huddled up with San Antonio right there at 14-15? So it'll be interesting to see how that matchup plays out. One kind of negative from this entire situation, though, Ben, that I've noticed is it feels like people are kind of writing off the impact that Jayshon Tate has just because he wasn't, you know, available for this game. He was, you know, resting with the, you know, very, very minor ankle injury, as Steven Silas put it. He said if it was regular season, he probably would have played. But it feels like people are kind of writing off his impact and his potential impact and the impact that I'm assuming he's had throughout camp in the offseason as a leader, as somebody who is entrusted by this coaching staff to have a vocal role on this team. And it feels like people are just ready to cast him by the wayside because he wasn't there for the one preseason win where they stomped the Spurs.
Yeah, I think that's being very much overdone. I think it's easy to look at that game last night and say that even though Jayshon Tate's a good defender, look, you brought in two really good perimeter defenders in Jabari Smith and Tari Eason that are rookies, and that's true. But beyond just one-on-one defense, the value for Jayshon Tate at the NBA level is what I call a connector on both ends of the court, the way he makes the various pieces fit together. Offensively, he moves without the ball very well. He's an underrated passer. We'll see if the shot comes along, but regardless, he's one of those guys that can be effective without the ball in his hands. Defensively, it's not just his man defense, but his communication. It's how he functions in the team construct. And guess what? The San Antonio Spurs are a team that you don't necessarily need that against because you can just out-talent them. You're more talented and there's more continuity, as we said earlier, because the Spurs had so many changes in the offseason, really tearing this thing down. And at the moment, they don't have Keldon Johnson either, which makes them even worse than they will be in the regular season. So the Rockets just had an enormous talent advantage last night. Where you need a guy like Jayshon Tate, and really that role of a connector is when you're playing better teams, when you need to not just line up and win based on just sheer talent, but actually trying to maximize the chemistry and the value of individual pieces and make, I guess, the whole greater than the sum of the parts, to use that expression. That's where Jayson Tate is really useful, and people should not forget about that simply because the Rockets in game one of the preseason just went up against a team that, quite frankly, they're just far more talented than.
Coming up, I'm going to let Ben drive the bus a little bit. Are we going to be talking offense or defense, and what impressed us the most from preseason game number one against the Spurs? We're going to get there in just a moment after a quick message from our friends over at Built Bar. If you haven't tried Built Bar Puffs yet, you are absolutely missing out. Delicious, indulgent cookie dough flavor covered in 100% chocolate. That's right, Built Bar has done it yet again. Your absolute brand new favorite. The cookie dough chunk puffs have a light and chewy texture, real cookie dough chunks, and of course, they're covered in 100% chocolate. The cookie dough chunk puffs are only 160 calories, and they have a whopping 15 grams of protein in them. Not to mention, they've got you covered for all of your traditional protein bar needs. They've got salted caramel, mint brownie, peanut butter, raspberry, strawberry, salted caramel, you name it, they probably have it as a protein bar flavor over at Built Bar. My personal favorite, the coconut brownie chunk. You can't go wrong with a single bar on their menu. So go to built.com and use promo code LOCKEDON15 to get 15% off your very next order of the most amazing protein products on the market, whether it's puffs, bars, you name it. Go use promo code LOCKEDON15 to get 15% off your very next order over at built.com. And continuing on here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast, home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. Now, Ben, I'm going to let you drive the bus here for a moment. What impressed you more in this preseason game? Was it the offensive flow of things, the ball movement, you know, just how connected the Rockets looked offensively? Or was it the defense and kind of holding the Spurs to, I mean, yeah, they kind of picked things up in the second half a little bit. They wound up scoring just under 100. The Rockets still put a, you know, a wallop on them. But which side of the ball impressed you a bit more? And we'll kind of dig deeper on that.
So this is like the old days of Locked On Rockets where I'm the captain now.
Yeah, there we go. You're the captain now. I'm the guest. In fact, God, okay. If I was more creative, I could have like flipped our little boxes like on the fly for our viewers. But I wasn't prepared, unfortunately.
Okay, fair enough. I'll let it slide for this time. But for me, I'm not going to pick offense or defense. I'm actually going to pick a two-man combination because I think we saw it on both ends of the court. And what floored me from the outset was just how well Jabari Smith Jr. and Alperen Şengün play together. You can see the synergies, and it ties into some of our pre-draft debates, in which I don't want to relitigate Jabari versus Paolo Banchero because I know that's something that would get us going down a road that we'll regret within a couple of hours on Twitter based on the conversations that inevitably sparks. But what I will say is that part of the case for Jabari is that he is a cleaner fit with your current roster, and putting him next to Şengün, you can see so many synergies on both ends of the floor. We saw it really the first possession of the game when they gave Şengün the ball in the high post about 16, 17 feet from the bucket, and he found Jabari Smith, who dove inside and had a dunk. And one of the weaknesses for Jabari, at least early in his career, he's not a huge creator. He's not a huge passer. Well, now you're putting him next to a front court guy who is, and there really aren't that many centers who, I know that Alperen Şengün is just 20 years old in year two, but he's already one of the better passing bigs in the game, in my opinion, just in terms of how he can read the floor and see guys when they're, you know, trying to get to their spots or cut, whatever it may be. And that allows Jabari to play to his strengths. We saw that several times throughout that game. And then defensively, the one thing you can say about Şengün is that he's certainly not a traditional rim protector, but Jabari at 6'11" and perhaps still growing, he's only, 19 years old and a relatively new 19 at that. Turn that in May, he may even grow to 7 feet. And at that point, even if he's fairly thin, look, Kevin Durant is a really good rim protector. And while I'm not trying to compare Jabari Smith to Kevin Durant, what I am talking about is...
No. Aggregation, please. Oh, Get in here. Aggregate Ben DuBose. He already said
yes. But it, just in terms of the archetype of their bodies, even if you're skinny, if you have that type of length and you have good instincts, and clearly Jabari Smith is a high IQ player, then you can provide a lot of rim protection simply based on your length and making the right reads. And so I think it can help Şengün with some of his deficiencies on the defensive end. And then offensively, those two guys really play off each other very well, because Jabari is a guy you don't want to necessarily ask him to create his own offense that much. You want him to do more things off ball, be it cutting or trying to get to his spots for those open threes, which he made five of them last night. And Şengün is a guy who can operate with the ball in his hands as sort of not just a hub, but the hub. I was struck by, even with Kevin Porter Jr. and Jalen Green on the court, it felt like the vast majority of possessions were running through Şengün, especially in the first half. The second half got a little bit wonky because Şengün left after bumping knees early in the third quarter, like the first minute or so. So we didn't see it as much in the second half. But the first half, I was struck by, even with KPJ and Jalen, so much was running through Şengün. It went pretty smoothly. And that's really going to be huge for Jabari's development, in my opinion, because when you have another front court piece that can take on that sort of playmaking burden, then it makes it easier for Jabari not to overextend himself, develop bad habits by perhaps trying to do too much. We saw that maybe a couple of times last night, but not very often. And I think that was encouraging, that even on a night that Jabari had it really going from a shooting perspective, he didn't really, other than once or twice, really try and do way too much and think that he was Superman. He still stayed within his skill set. And I think having a playmaker next to him in Şengün can really facilitate that even more moving forward. So to me, on both ends of the court, what's really jumped out to me is that pairing. I know they're just 19 and 20 years old, but I said it on Twitter last night. It's going to take a few years, but you can see, in my opinion, that being the potential starting front court for a contender one day. Those two guys, their personalities, their skill sets, it just all seems to fit together really, really well. And at a high level, that was what stood out to me last night more than anything else.
Yeah, I loved it. I should have. I'm glad you brought it up, and I'm sure we would have stumbled across that duo, that pairing, at some point in this podcast, because I brought it up in the recap show, and I was like, you know what? I want to discuss this pairing a little bit further, because what stood out is, right, I agree 100%, right? That was the thing. We go back to the whole pre-draft analysis and everything. Okay, you know, best player, best fit, all this stuff. And when you have three prospects that are all roughly the same talent level at the top of the draft, you start maybe taking fit into consideration. And Jabari was always the guy that seemed like he was just, I don't know, cloned, made in a lab to play next to Alperen and Şengün, because they both kind of mask some of the inefficiencies of the other, right? Where you look at, you know, Jabari, who he doesn't have the creation ability, the ability to, you know, get his shot off, you know, at least as comfortably as we would like right now. And then Alp is a playmaking whiz, right? He can create shots out of seemingly nothing. And then you flip it, and it's Alp's maybe a bit of a defensive liability at times. Like, guess who's a defensive savant that you just plugged into the front court right next to him? So it's awesome to have that pairing in the front court. What I was kind of surprised to see is, like you, it felt like a lot of the offense was running through Alper and Şengün. But at the same time, the entire game, we didn't see Alp dish it to Jabari for a single three all game. And that was kind of like, you know, it's not necessarily that it was a bad thing. It was just kind of shocking that the best three-point shooter on the floor never somehow found a pass from Alp. And I wonder if I think maybe some of that plays into, right, the whole fact that Jabari had moved without the ball really well when Alp had the basketball, which is why he did find him for two buckets, but on the interior as opposed to the perimeter.
Although there was at least one when Şengün set it up for KPJ, and then KPJ read the leverage situation based on the play that Şengün made, and then he kicked it to Jabari for a three. That was at least one of them, might have been two. So there were sort of some indirect assists, if you can, from Şengün, as far as Jabari from behind the arc. But yeah, you're right. Some of it may be just the fact that with Şengün, he's more likely, Jabari that is, to dart to the rim, which we saw, again, the first bucket of the game for the Rockets, and that set a big tone. And the other thing I thought was encouraging from the standpoint of the Jabari-Şengün pairing, I'm sure some will push back, and I saw it from at least a couple of people on Twitter saying, look, while this is a good thing, at the same time, there's a reason why Şengün was a mid first round pick and Jabari was in the conversation for number one overall, and that you've got to do your best to maximize those true blue chip assets. And Şengün is, you know, I don't want to say a lottery ticket, but Şengün is someone that if he hits at a high level, then you take that as a bonus. You don't necessarily count on it based on where he was drafted. But honestly, I mean, there are exceptions to the rule in terms of guys that are drafted much lower than they should be. And just on an individual level last night, I thought Şengün made some plays, especially in the first half, one-on-one against, say what you will about San Antonio, but they do have a very strong defensive big up front. And Şengün on three different occasions made plays one-on-one with a couple of baby hooks. And then he faked one, went went up and under and got an and one in one sequence against a pretty good defensive big. And this is just year two, and he's making those plays on a one-on-one basis against one of the better defending NBA centers. To me, that's one of those things that tells you that Şengün is going to be able to get scaled up to maintain some of the things we saw last year in smaller minutes against backups and do them even going up against some of the better centers in the NBA. Hopefully the 6'11 is legit, the new measurements, we'll see about that. But I do think that aside from the pairing, we also saw some really encouraging things from Şengün individually. And I think it's important to note that because that's going to be some of the pushback when we talk about all the synergies of this. Some people are going to say, well, you know, that's great, but how good is Alperen Şengün? Is it worth, you know, not that the Rockets had a choice to take Banchero anyway, but just continuing the discussion that we were having in terms of tying it back to the pre-draft analysis, how important is this? Well, it becomes a lot more important if you really believe that Alperen Şengün can be a starting quality big or better on a contender. And last night, again, it's just one game, but against a pretty strong opponent, good competition up front. He looked really, really good. So far, so good on that front.
Yeah, I mean, Jakob Poeltl is nothing to, like, you know, turn your nose up at. He is right. A quality big at the NBA level, and he even gave Şengün some problems last year. So to see him kind of have that growth, and I believe Steven Silas even talked about it a little bit, either it was at pregame or potentially the practice the other day. They're all kind of blurring together. But I believe somebody asked him about, hey, you know, you've got, you know, Alp's got kind of a big test coming up with Jakob Poeltl, and then down the line, you know, Miles Turner, Bam Adebayo. Like, there's some very quality big men that he's going to have to face throughout this preseason, and that, you know, kind of throwing him into this gauntlet, so to speak, in the early going of the preseason is good for him just to kind of develop that, I guess, you know, kind of harboring a better learning atmosphere, if you will, in the early going.
Yeah. Organic learning, if you will.
Yeah, we'll go with that. Organic learning, if you will. Coming up, we're going to get some thoughts on some of the guys that are a little bit further down in the bench rotation. I didn't get a chance to talk about Ty Washington and his play in this game against the Spurs in our recap episode. We'll talk about him and a couple other guys coming up in just one moment. And final segment here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast, home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. Now, before we start talking about some of the other Rockets that were, you know, I wasn't buried at the end of the bench, but the guys who kind of, you know, they got the second half burn, and guys like Ty Washington and maybe some Trevor Hudgens, guys like that, which, again, I mainly just want to focus on Ty because I thought his minutes were really productive given what he was able to do on the floor. But, Ben, did Bruno Fernando, so first off, I mean, we got the news, like, it was like right before tip off, like before this game even happened. Did that come as a shock to you? Because for me, right, like I am myself and feels like many others, right, we kind of had Usman Garuba painted as just, all right, you're probably the backup center, you know.
Yeah.
And we'll see how this all pans out with it. You know, Alpi as the starter, Garuba's the backup. He finally gets a chance to prove himself. And then out of nowhere, like from the top rope, just Bruno Fernando comes flying in and gets a 4-year deal, is the first big man substitution off the bench in this preseason game. And apparently he's just been impressing everybody left, right, and center throughout training camp.
Yeah, I had heard that last week. I did not hear that they were on the verge of giving him a standard NBA contract, which surprised me because by the end of training camp, now you are going to have to release someone that you weren't planning on, barring a trade, of course. There could always be a 2-for-1. But the bottom line is you now have 16 standard contracts. So somebody is ultimately going to have to go that maybe now is not in everybody's expectation. The consensus, that is, I think after the OKC trade, a lot of people just said, hey, we're going to slot in Derek Favors into that David Nwaba basically trade salary matching slot and then move forward with the 15 as we had thought before. And now all of a sudden, to make room for Bruno, you are going to have to let someone go. Maybe there's a trade, a 2-for-1, or I guess just a dump somewhere else for a future draft pick. But if not, there is going to have to be a hard decision made. So it did surprise me from that standpoint, because what you could have done, you could have given Bruno a two-way deal. And the 50-game limit on the two-way deal would basically take you up until the trade deadline. And then by that point, I'm sure you could dump someone that perhaps you're not sold on re-signing in the offseason, or maybe you're just trying to clear the salary books because we know the financial flexibility. So doing it early does surprise me. But then when you look at the terms, it's so friendly. Only the first year is fully guaranteed, and this year doesn't really matter anyway because they're already over the salary cap. What does it matter? And then all the future years, team options, it's basically the Garrison Matthews contract all over again, using a little bit of that non-taxpayer mid-level exception. to get it done. And that's peak in terms of team flexibility, because the options are with the Rockets and Rafael Stone, not Bruno. So I do see where they're coming from, especially if he's playing well. It makes sense to get him on a friendly deal the same way you did with Gary Bird a year ago. But it's definitely going to make a hard decision over the next week or two, unless there's a trade coming that we aren't aware of. But at this point, you know, I'll believe the trade when I see it. As far as Bruno on the court, though, it's easy to forget, but he was a high second round pick in 2019. He's really not that far ahead of Garuba in terms of his age. It's not like he's not a prospect. I feel like some people, when he got traded here last season, felt like he was just, you know, a random veteran in the middle of his career. No, he's still in his low 20s, 23, 24 years old, drafted in 2019. And then I feel like all the guys in that 2019, 2020 cycle, their development got stunted a little bit based on some of the COVID factors. So he's still relatively young. And then he was in Boston, where in a contending environment, he's just never going to get the chance really to play and learn and get better. There is talent there. There's a reason why he was almost a first-round pick in 2019, the same draft class as Kevin Porter Jr., by the way, when he was pick 30. That's something that there's something there. That's the best way I would put it. There's talent. Whether the Rockets can unleash it or not, that remains to be seen. Clearly, there's positive signs to this point in camp. I think that goes without saying. But the bigger thing, just sort of tying it in with Garuba, yeah, you know, maybe this ends up pushing Garuba to the G League if Bruno continues to play this well. We'll have to wait and see. Of course, there's trades that could come into the mix as well. But the bottom line is people forget Bruno is not really the mid-tier veteran the way a lot of Rockets Twitter seems to think he is. This is a guy who's actually pretty damn similar to Kevin Porter Jr. in terms of his career trajectory and where he is. He's a lot younger than you think. And so maybe some of these guys do sort of fall through the cracks, especially if they're on a contender like Boston. And maybe there is something there in terms of an athletic, physical backup big. By the way, the updated measurements, he's up to 6'10 now. If he's 6'10 rather than 6'9, that gives him a much, much more of a fighting chance against true centers in the league. Again, it's one preseason game, and generally at the end of last year, he played in very low leverage situations. But again, there is a case for where he can actually be something. This is not, I feel like he just sort of gets tossed in this sort of middling veteran bin by a lot of people on Twitter. And I think that's a bit unfair. I think he does have more upside than what some people give him credit for.
No, I couldn't agree more, Ben. I mean, I even, you know, last year after, you know, seeing him be kind of just lumped in as like just trade fodder, you know, filler or whatever for the trade, a body to make the trade actually work. You know, I was like, well, there might be something here. And then he had his breakout performance against the Mavericks last season, where he had, I think it was a double-double, if I'm not mistaken. Yep. In like basically played like the entire fourth quarter straight. Nice little coming out party there. And I thought, okay, there might be something here with Bruno. Like, I don't know where he's going to get the minutes. I don't know. But this is one of the worst teams in the NBA. So there's not really, you know, there's not really anybody else ahead of him in the pecking order, I guess, that you can comfortably say, well, this guy deserves minutes over this guy. So, yeah, I kind of looked at it and I thought it would have been an absolute steal to keep him on a two-way deal. I could not imagine. I was like, is there seriously not another team that wants to come knocking and procure his services? Because as you alluded,
I was surprised by that too.
If he's 6'10", right? If he's, and now it makes more sense that nobody came knocking, because he wants to be here in Houston and he's excited about trying to continue to build what they're growing here. And obviously Rafael Stone, masterclass in GMing, got him on an incredibly team-friendly deal. The Gary Bird special, the Armani Brooks special, if you will. And the last time the Rockets had a 6'10" rim running big who was athletic and could play above the rim, it worked out pretty well for him. And that guy's name was Clint Capella. And I mean, Bruno talked about the fact that Clint gave him a healthy dose of advice when they were together, you know, in Atlanta, kind of discussing the fact that, hey, like, you got to find something that you're good at and fill that role, fill that niche, and then teams won't be able to get rid of you if you fill that void. And I think Bruno absolutely has found this kind of like niche role on this team, which is nobody else on this team other than KJ Martin can play above the rim. And then when you specifically look at the fives on this team, nobody else has the skill set that Bruno Fernando provides out of the other fives on this team.
Yes. And one more quick note on the contract. You look back a few years, there is risk if he outplays significantly the two-way, in that he may then be much less likely to take a team-friendly deal like this with all these team options. There is risk within the Rockets. The scenario I would go back to is the 2018-2019 season with Daniel House Jr., when they they signed him back on that two-way in early December, and he started playing so well that he was then reluctant to sign the sort of team-friendly deal that Daryl Morey wanted to sign him to, because he knew he could get much more money than that and have much more leverage as a free agent in that coming summer. And the Rockets did end up retaining him, but they ended up retaining him on a much less team-friendly contract than this team option every year that we have now with Bruno Fernando and Garrison Matthews. So that is something to consider. Yes, it is going to force a release, and so that's why it surprised me. But when you think about it, if you believe that he's going to have a good year, there is incentive to getting this done early, because if you wait, you can have a Daniel House situation again, where the guy says, you know what, I'm good. I'll play this out on a two-way, or just sign me guaranteed for 1 year and then let me hit free agency as soon as I can so I can get a richer contract. The fact is the Rockets are betting on him breaking out, so they're trying to take care of this on the front end. There is some risk in that clearly you're going to have to let go of somebody that you wouldn't have before, be it a salary guy like Favors or a veteran like Boban. We'll have to wait and see. But I can see what they're thinking, because there is risk to letting him on that two-way if he significantly outplays it, and then he becomes incentivized just to try and get to free agency as quickly as he can.
You know, kind of on that note, Ben, I mean, I've been scratching my head trying to think of, you know, now that they're at 16 players, they've got to cut it down to 15.
Yeah.
Trying to figure out who is the odd man out. Now, I know that Steven Silas was very specific in saying, hey, don't read too much into the rotations, the lineups, whatever, from the very first one preseason game. But I cannot help but look at Garrison Matthews with just 5 minutes played and think, man, like I have done such a 180 where I got talked into the idea of Garrison Matthews, the shooting that it provides, the spacing. And I thought, man, like, he might really be an early part of Steven Silas' rotation this season. And now, within 24 hours, I'm looking at it and I'm like, I think he might be the odd man out. Because again, he is on that team-friendly deal. He's got all the non-guaranteed years in front of him. And not only that, of all the pieces that could potentially be moved, if KJ Martin really is bought into what this team is trying to do, and if he wants to be here, if he's good, if he's happy and content, in a vacuum, I'm taking KJ Martin 11 times out of 10 compared to Garrison Matthews, given their respective skill sets. But even on top of that, feels like 29 other teams in the league would take a Garrison Matthews on his contract, current contract, and float the Rockets a second rounder. There's a lot of contenders out there that could use that level of shooting at least throughout the regular season. Like even the Lakers, you throw Garrison Matthews on a team with LeBron James and Anthony Davis and Russell Westbrook, he's going to have nights where he breaks 20 without breaking a sweat, just because he's going to get some of the most wide open shots of his career. Now, whether or not he becomes playable in the playoffs, that's a different story. But at least as far as a regular season rotation piece, I could see him being the easiest piece to move and the piece that makes the most sense to move as it currently stands.
Yeah, it's plausible. And keep in mind, too, there's an open two-way after you converted Bruno, and you could easily claim someone after the cuts prior to the regular season around the league, the same way you claimed Garrison Matthews 1 year ago. So you could easily replace someone like that if you need to. Now, I'm not going to read too much into the usage of Garrison Matthews or lack thereof in the preseason, simply because I think the preseason is an optimal time to experiment in terms of the guys who are more athletic, have more upside, but you worry about, is there enough floor spacing? Well, this is the time to figure it out and see how things go with guys like KJ at the three and Tari Eason off the bench. With Garrison Matthews, there's really less incentive to experiment, because at this point, he is who he is as a player. You know what you're going to get and not get from him. It's just about, do you need that on the floor to make these other units work? So I think in the preseason, there's no doubt that guys like Tari and KJ have more upside than Garrison Matthews. So you might as well play those guys and see what happens. You know, can you function without having an extra floor spacer like Garrison Matthews? So far, so good. They are going to play better teams in San Antonio. But yeah, I will say, for me, it's less about like, what does Garrison Matthews play or not play? It's more about, how does the offense function without him? And what do these guys that are potentially his replacements in the rotation do with this opportunity?
It functioned pretty well without him.
Yeah, no doubt. Now, it is the Spurs. It is the Spurs, keep in mind. But yeah, KJ at the three, I thought it looked encouraging. I think it's pretty clear by now that KJ, some of the offseason reports about his happiness or lack thereof were a bit overdone, or not even the reports, some of the concern on Rockets Twitter. It seems like he's in a pretty good place, and he played at the three last night with Jabari at the four and either Şengün or Bruno at the five, and things looked fine. Say what you will about his form, but KJ shot 36% from three on reasonable volume in his first two seasons. There is something there. And if he can play the three, clearly he just gives you much more athleticism and much more overall talent than Garrison does. Tari Eason made so many plays without even the Rockets needing to call a play or run anything for him. And so if they can function with guys like that at the three, then and if Josh Christopher continues to improve as a shooter, then what do you necessarily need Garrison Matthews for in your rotation? Now, that's not saying that they need to release him, but if you get to a point in which, hey, you've got to make a roster cut anyway, and maybe you can get a decent second round pick, we can see that's a priority for Rafael Stone because he continues to try and make moves using their room beneath the luxury tax to accept salary from other teams. Did it last year with Brooklyn? Did it last week with Oklahoma City? If you can perhaps get a second round pick for a guy like Garrison Matthews from a team like the Lakers that really needs that shooting, then yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. It just depends on how the offense functions with those other guys. But as you said, so far, so good. And I really didn't think the spacing was that poor. I'm sure some will point to the fact that, you know, Kevin Porter Jr. and Jalen Green didn't shoot that well last night. But honestly, I think some of that was just missing shots that they typically make. KPJ was in the 99th percentile catch and shoot last year. We know how Jalen Green finished the season. I think they made the right reads last night. I think they looked generally comfortable running the offense. I just think they missed some shots that they otherwise make. It happens to everybody from time to time. And by the way, they're plus minus KPJ and Jalen, plus 23, plus 24, the best of anybody on the court for either team. So, you know, the shooting, to me, that was an anomaly. By and large, they looked comfortable, and they also looked comfortable in the minutes that a guy like KJ Martin was at the three. And that's one of the things you worry about. Is the floor spacing going to be there? The same can be said for Jayshon Tate once he returns, and hopefully that's going to be Friday. It seems pretty clear that Tate's going to come off the bench if you read between the lines with Eric Gordon starting. And Gordon looked really good last night, by the way. And so, the bottom line is just how does the offense function if you don't have that floor spacing of Garrison Matthews? Nobody would argue that guys like KJ, Tari, Jayshon Tate have more upside than Garrison Matthews. It's just about what it means for the collective unit if you don't have that floor spacing. Well, so far, so good. And yeah, if that continues in the preseason, then yeah, that might make a case to look at Matthews' trades, because it's not that he's your weakest link. No, he's a good basketball player. But if instead of releasing someone, you can trade somebody and get, you know, a second round pick from a contender for that, then maybe that's the best case scenario if it's starting to look like you're not going to play Garrison anyway.
Yeah, the smart move to be had if that's where the chips kind of fall, which, again, it'd be unfortunate to see Garrison Matthews go, if only because hearing MVP chants for Gary Bird during game 7 of the Rockets win streak last season during, you know, Harden's, you know, really official first homecoming. That's a yep. memory that I will not soon forget as far as Rockets basketball is concerned. Now, I will say, I lied. We're out of time. So no Ty Washington discussion today. We're going to do that for a future episode. So be sure to tune back in. We'll be sure to give Ty his flowers, as well as revisiting some other discussions from this week. What's up?
No, I was just going to say there's no game again until Friday. So you've got time.
Oh, yeah, we got plenty of times, lots of discussions to be had about what this game means and different things, different takeaways, big picture, small picture, all that good stuff. But Ben, you know the drill. Let everybody know where to track you down at.
Yep. The Rockets Wire on Twitter, Ben Dubose on Twitter. Those are the accounts for the blog I run with USA Today Sports Media Group. And of course, my personal account, Ben Dubose, where I talk Houston sports, also a little bit of Chelsea football all the damn time. And of course, the blog itself, rocketswire.usatoday.com, for all sorts of daily written coverage of your Houston Rockets.
Always a pleasure to have you back on the pod, Ben.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
And that's going to do it for another edition of Locked On Rockets. As always, thank you so much for checking out the show. If you haven't done so yet, please consider subscribing wherever you listen to your podcast. That's Apple, Spotify, Google, the brand new Odyssey app, free and available on all podcast platforms. We're also available on YouTube. So go to YouTube, search up Locked On Rockets. Be sure to like, comment, and subscribe. Remember the mantra, 4 to house, 4 to team, 4 D algorithm. Go comment on the YouTube show. It helps out a ton. But as always, thank you so much for watching. Thank you so much for listening. We look forward to having you back right here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball.